Here's the next pitch. This one is lifted high in the air, and it is clobbered out there to right field, and that ball is out of here. Bohr with a blast out there. It cleared the Royals bullpen down the right side. The Angels are going to tack on some add-on runs now, and now it's 7-2 Angels.
Angels go on to beat the Royals yesterday 7-3, take 2 out of 3 in that series. Angels now 12-17. The Royals 9-19. Homer Bailey, the starter, giving up 3 runs in the first inning. But if the rookie Kelvin Gutierrez would have made maybe a better effort or just played the ball better at third on Albert Pujols' 2-run double, which put him third time on the Major League Baseball's RBI list, perhaps that inning would have been a little bit different, and the Royals could have won the ball game and then closed it to 4-2, but gave up that 3-run shot there in the top of the ninth off of newest Royal Ben Lively, who I didn't know much about, but made his Major League debut yesterday, and the Royals do fall 7-3 to the Angels. Here's Ned Yost on Homer Bailey's performance. Righted the ship after a shaky start.
You know, as a manager, you're kind of evaluating every inning, you know, and I know that he just didn't have it his last start. And first inning, he's grinding through it. You know, like I said, I felt like he, you know, could have got out of it with nothing, but you still, you know, if he can't find it here, what am I going to do? And you're kind of lining up innings, you know, and he just went out there from that first inning. We talk about come in, make an adjustment, and that's what he did. Made a little bit of an adjustment. I didn't see a major adjustment, but just competed. He just grinded it out. His split was good. His curveball was good. And, you know, didn't really make a lot of mistakes with his fastball and just, you know, gave us a great start.
He did save the bullpen to an extent, but the Royals couldn't get the bats going, only one hit through the first 6 innings, and the Royals do lose to the Angels 7-3 yesterday at the K. Royals back in action tonight. Brad Keller, their ace on the hill, 2-2 with the ERA of 3.41. Opens up a 4-game series against the first-place Tampa Bay Rays, or 18-9. The Rays took 2 out of 3 in Tampa recently against the Boys in Blue. Royals-Tampa Bay, first game of that series beginning tonight at 7:15. Once again, a huge thank you to everybody that went with us on a Royals bus trip yesterday to Kansas City. I use that as my good news of the day because it was just kind of uplifting. There was nothing negative about the trip at all. I mean, yeah, it rained on us in the 8th inning, but nobody complained about that. People were very positive. It just seemed like everybody wanted a day away from the everyday stresses of life and have a good time. And that's what we all had.
Yes.
It's fun.
It's always fun. And it's fun to get like a diverse group together,
yes,
of different people
of
from different places and things,
yeah,
like that, and kind of get to know the listeners a little bit too. That's probably my favorite part of it, just to see everybody come together like that, because a lot of those people probably don't know each other,
yeah,
you know?
Right.
Some of them do. I mean, they go together, but
yeah, and perhaps I made new friends yesterday,
yeah,
as well, no matter what their age. We had folks that were, you know, I don't know how old they were, but probably in their 60s or maybe even 70s. We had kids as young as probably, what, 6 or 7 years old. We had a few kids on the bus, and we had a group of people went together. We had couples and families. I mean, it was really awesome. It was really a lot of fun, and we thank everybody for going, and we goofed around with them. We gave away some prizes, and we had lots of snacks and water and pop on the bus. Bus driver was fantastic, got us there safely to and fro. And once again, big thanks to our sponsors, Strikers Bowling Center in Downs, Subway in Osborne, where you could have signed up at all these locations, Cunningham Telephone Cable in Glen Elder and Beloit, Mankato Express and Mankato Professional Pharmacy in Mankato, Bonert Welding in Jewel, Ray's Apple Market, Gray Drug and Fountain, Dairy Queen in Beloit, and big thanks to Todd and Ray's Apple Market for providing the snacks and the drinks on the bus trip to Kauffman Stadium and back. And we had a wonderful time, and we hope to do it again next year. This is our 4th year doing the Royals bus trip. Next year will be year number 5. All right, local sports information, Dusty. Why don't we start chronological order? Let's go back to Friday, the Beloit Relays. Just give us a quick little overview of that.
Yeah, you can find complete results for that at ncksports.com. The Beloit Trojans won both the girls and boys 3A, 4A division team championships there on Friday, and then Smith Center boys took first, and Bennington girls took first. I think the highlight of the day was Brady Pullen's high jump of 6'10¼" that broke a record from 1995 and 1982 and set a new school record as well. And I think everybody was pretty enthralled with that performance there on Friday and with that meet record. So, all the results are at ncksports.com. We had a lot of area kids that had a lot of success there at Beloit on Friday.
Yeah, Brady almost cleared seven from what I heard.
Yeah, and that's the you watch the video and see the pictures. If the bar would have been at seven on the one he cleared 6'10 and
I
a quarter,
he would have cleared
seven. Mm-hmm. They went to seven, and there was one of them that he almost got over, just barely hit with his backside, and then the other two were a little bit further away, I guess you would say, from getting to it. But yeah, he got pretty close to seven.
It's amazing how people can jump 7 feet on a high jump or higher. It's just, to me, it defies logic.
Yeah.
And usually you have to be tall and kind of a lanky person. You don't see short, stocky people doing high jump.
Yeah.
You know? And then pole vault is amazing, too. I saw Marshall Ferro, Scott City on Twitter, did 16.3 on pole vault in high school. Which is, you see that pole bend, and like, how does that not snap and you land on your back? And my son does junior high pole vault, and they don't go that high. They go, 7 feet and six and a half, 7 feet, seven and a half, maybe eight. And I'm like, who came up with this idea of a pole vault competition?
Yeah.
They're just kind of sitting around like, what would be really cool? Get this really big pole, and then you run with it as hard as you can, and then you stick it into the pit, and then you propel yourself up in the air over another pole that is placed horizontally on some bar, some standards, and then you jump over it and throw your stick back and fall on all the way down onto a mat. Sounds good, dude. Let's start that sport.
Yeah.
I mean, just where was that one born? I mean, it's cool.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch. It scares me sometimes, though.
Oh, yeah.
Especially those guys that go so high.
Yeah.
It's just, but high jumping, I mean, listen, I know Brady's family pretty well. I have no idea where he got that athleticism from. And I don't think Byron would disagree or his mom, Barb. I mean, they're great people, but I think they'd be the first to tell you we weren't quite that athletic when we were in high school.
Yeah.
I mean, Brady can jump. He obviously can jump. He can dunk the ball, this and that, as we saw in basketball. And I kind of look at my family the same way. I'm like, I hope my kids have more athleticism than I did, because I was a decent athlete, but I was nothing. I was never super athletic. I had to make up for my lack of quickness and hops, as I would call them. I credit card hops, as we joked. I couldn't dunk the basketball.
Yeah.
I couldn't high jump, but I could shoot the ball, or I thought I was one of the smarter players on the floor, because I had to be, because to make up for my lack of some of my ability compared to other guys that had all the ability in the world but didn't use it.
Yeah.
I was like, I want that ability. Transform that and shove it into me. Put it with my work ethic. I could be really, really good. And so I'm hoping my kids have a little more athleticism than I did. And my wife will be the first to tell you, she did tennis, I think, and some softball. She wasn't very athletic or big in the sports. So it is weird, because I think sometimes people think, mom and dad were great athletes. That means that kid has to be a great athlete. Sometimes it goes the other way around. Mom and dad were great athletes, and the kids are like, they don't care about sports, or they're not athletic. And then sometimes you're like, how did that person get to be that tall when they look at mom and dad? That defies logic.
Yeah.
And how are they so athletic when mom and dad were honestly not that great at sports, and they'll be the first ones to admit it? Well, it is weird how that works.
Yeah,
I'm glad it's not completely predictable.
Yeah, exactly. What I think's wild about Brady is, like, he's 6'4".
Yeah.
And if he jumped over himself, could clear himself without a problem.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's a tall kid.
Yes.
He could jump over himself without a problem right now.
Yes.
And that's what's wild about all that to me is, like, if you can jump higher than your actual height and you can jump over yourself no matter how tall you are, that's insane to me. I can't comprehend that, because I would never even imagine being able to do it.
When you watch the high jump, I don't think it does it justice when you see the bar as high as it is. But if you put it in context, like if you would put a basketball goal right next to the high jump pit and raise the basketball goal to 7 feet high, I think people have a better understanding of how difficult that is, or apparently not.
Put something there like that's upright instead of, of horizontal.
Give you a better picture.
Give you vertical instead of horizontal. Like, when Eric Kennard high jumped over Jordan Enriquez that one time at K-State, it gives you a different perspective of how high that actually is.
Yeah. Because when you see the high jump, it's high, but you don't. You're like 7 feet. That's okay.
Yeah.
But you see a basketball goal right next to it, or a 7 foot tall person, that means you can jump a 7 foot tall person.
Yeah.
That's bonkers, man. Bonkers. All right, so all that information, the bullet relays and the results, if you missed them, are posted at ncksports.com. Another interesting development over Friday, I think it came out on Friday, was girls wrestling. Why don't you fill everybody about that?
Yeah, and there's been a push the last 2 years, really, called the Kansas 24. Yeah, basically what they wanted was 24 schools to be doing girls wrestling so that the High School Activities Association would sanction it and they would actually be able to have their own state championship. So they didn't get that sanctioned the last couple of years, but they gathered at McPherson, had their own state championship for girls wrestling, and this thing went from, like, I think 270 participants in the first year to over 600 in the second year. Mm-hmm. And so that built the steam, and so Keisha voted on it on Friday to get it sanctioned, and it passed with flying colors. 51-2, I think, was the final vote. I
know 63-2.
63-2, okay.
I don't know what the two were smoking.
Yeah, there was only two. I knew there was only two because it's so overwhelming that I didn't write the numbers down. It was like a landslide, but I knew the two that voted no. But, yeah, that thing passed with flying colors, and girls wrestling is now sanctioned in the state of Kansas, and they will have their own state wrestling tournament that will actually be given trophies and medals that are officially from the state instead of having to put together their own. So that's a huge development, and I think the biggest thing is that they want to get girls to do things in the winter, and mm-hmm. the participation numbers, when you look at fall and spring, are almost double compared mm-hmm. to what you have in the winter for girls sports, because there's really only one sport that they could
basketball.
Play, and it was basketball, and, mm-hmm. and now you have two of them, and you can get, and I don't think there's anything ever wrong with getting more kids involved in extracurricular activities and being active at any time during the year. Mm-hmm. And so this is going to – we've had a few girls from Lincoln and from our area that have competed in wrestling, and it's – and I know life's not always fair, but it's just not fair to ask them, when you have this many now, to keep going up against the boys
yeah.
when they go out to tournaments. Mm-hmm. And that was the big push, and like – the hashtag is girls wrestle, and they do, and now they'll be able to do it as sanctioned Keisha members.
That's fantastic. When will the first girls state wrestling tournament be?
I would think it might be next year if they can get this thing. I haven't looked into all the details. I'll know more when the minutes come out, and I can actually dive in and look at everything from that aspect. But yeah, I mean, they're...
I think it was 1920 is what I saw on Twitter, which would be next season.
Yeah, it would be next season, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was pretty sure that yeah. it was going to go right next yeah. year if they got a sanction.
That's awesome. Now, another good move made by members of Keisha, or Keisha themselves, was the changes to the state golf championships. Explain that.
Yeah, and that's... they're going from a regular 18-hole championship.
Which would be one round
state.
Of golf.
Yeah, at state. It's one round of golf, and the state championships will now be... Two rounds of golf, 36-hole state championship, and I think everybody that's involved in golf is pretty happy about that too, because what if you have one bad round and
you have one bad hole at the start of 18 holes, you're over already. Whereas a 2-day tournament and two rounds of golf, now you have a much better chance of recovering.
And so that would go into effect next season too. They won't change that for what they've got already going this year for the boys golf, but girls and boys golf will be 36 hole.
I would assume they would have one round one day, one round the next day. Okay, because here's the other thing that another reason why I think it's great is because you could have really windy, horrible conditions one day. And then the next day you have good conditions, and then it can balance out.
Yeah.
Because there might be some people just better golfing with the wind, some that aren't, and it's, I don't know if it's a real, it's a real state tournament, but, you know, you hate to have weather dampen it and mess it up. So, of course, there's more of a chance to have problems with, you know, if you have bad weather and you're trying to do two rounds. Of course, I would guess they just shorten it to one if it rained out sometime or whatever. But I think that's a good move, and it seems like everybody's in favor of it.
Yeah, the golf people are... I know my cousins that played golf, they're like, man, I wish I would have had that when I was golfing.
Yeah.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Join the party.
Yeah.
I've been saying that for 20-some years since I played. I wish they actually had longer shorts before. Instead, I had the short shorts.
Now they're going in a different direction. They're starting to get shorter shorts again. You see some of these college kids.
Well, they need to go a little shorter. I mean, when you're tripping over your knees because the shorts are like mid-range cargo pants. That's a little too big, so I'm with that. Don't want them as short as we used to have. And then the ones, don't even get me started. Okay, so let's talk now football, and let's talk Chiefs. We got a lot to get to when it comes to the Chiefs. The Chiefs did not have a first-round pick because they traded out for Frank Clark. More on Frank Clark coming up in a moment. But the Chiefs did trade up 5 spots in the second round to get Mecole Hardman. He is a wide receiver and return specialist from the University of Georgia. He has blazing speed. He can run the 40 in 4.27. He's been clocked once. Combine, I think, is 4.33. doesn't have the greatest hands, but that's something that they said about Tyreek Hill. And here's the interesting thing about this pick. Mecole Hardman, if you don't know, he's about 5'10", 5'11". He is a Tyreek Hill clone.
Yes.
It seems very clear that the Chiefs are looking for a guy to replace Tyreek Hill, and this guy is just like Tyreek Hill, except better person off the field, which I think a lot of people like. Two thumbs up, I'm all in. Mecole Hardman, kind of like Tyreek Hill's scouting report when he came out and drafted in the fifth round. It would have been much higher had he not had the off-the-field issues, as we know. Both great returners, both quick, very shifty, extremely fast, questionable hands, could develop into a solid receiver. Well, that's what's happened with Tyreek Hill. And the Chiefs coached him up. I would think they'd coach up Mecole Hardman. Dave Tobe, the special teams coach for the Chiefs, is absolutely ecstatic on having Mecole Hardman. So the Chiefs traded a fifth-round draft pick, which is not a major thing, to move up five spots with the Rams. Here's Brett Beach, GM of the Chiefs, on why they drafted Mecole Hardman with their first pick in this year's draft, which came at number 56 in the second round.
Yeah, no. Dave had the biggest smile in the room. We actually there was a few returners that we had Dave go out, and he does that every year. He came back and he said, you know, Mecole he thought was the closest thing to Devin Hester that he'd seen in a long time. So he was ecstatic, and he's by far the best punt and kick returner in the draft. And again, it's hard to turn down that kind of speed when you have a quarterback like Pat Mahomes. You want to give him as many weapons as possible.
So what about trading up for Hardman, giving up a fifth-round pick? Here's Veach to explain.
When we were looking at the board, you know, I think we were sitting there at 61. And it was funny because we had a lot of action, a lot of phone calls at 61. And we were looking at the board and, again, never going to pass up speed. And when you looked at the wideouts, there were still a lot of good wideouts left, but none that ran 4.27. So, you know, we got approached for a fifth-round pick. I think it was the Rams, a small move. And the teams that were picking before us, we didn't think that they'd go wide out, but I thought there are a few teams that might want to trade up and get in because we had taken a lot of calls. And so we ended up making the move. And then we came back at 63 and called those teams back that were calling us at 61, and they said they weren't interested in trading anymore. So I think we kind of played those cards right. And then, you know, scouts talk, and sure enough, those teams had said they were looking at Hardman too. So, I think we made the right calculated guess there. You kind of see how the board's fallen and how those wideouts are falling.
So that was the first pick for the Chiefs. That was round two, pick 56 overall in the draft on Friday. Then, just seven picks later, the Chiefs are their second round pick of the night. And they went with defensive back. He's played corner. He's played safety. He's versatile, which I love. Juan Thornhill from Virginia. And here's Brett Veach talking about Thornhill. And Chiefs didn't think he would be there at 63.
He's just a natural athlete. But he has great eyes and great vision back there, and natural knack to take the football away. He sees things develop quickly. He's able to quickly read and react. And again, aside from that, you know, this is a guy that played corner, I think, his first 2 years. And then they kind of moved him all over the field. So there was a lot in his plate at Virginia. And, I think he is a great addition. You know, we have numbers at our safety position, but there's not a lot of like pure free safeties that can come down and cover like Juan can. So I just think the ability to kind of move him around the field was something that was really attractive. And he was another guy too that, I mean, where we got him, what, pick 63, I don't think a lot of us before the night started would have thought that he would have been there at 63 too. So he was a guy that probably fell a little bit lower than we thought too.
I really like this pick for the Chiefs. He's a three-year starter for Virginia, 208 tackles, 12 tackles for loss, 1.5 sacks, forced fumble, 39 passes defensed. He's a playmaker. He can make plays on the ball from a safety position. He plays center field. The Chiefs need a little help at safety because Matthew's going to move around. He isn't your prototypical free safety. He's more of a strong safety that moves around. And he's all ACC selection. He's older. He's not young, okay? And when I mean older, he's not 19 or 20. He's, I think, 21.
Yeah.
He picked off 13 passes in college. And you want guys that can make plays on the ball. You know, how many times we see Steven Nelson drop an interception?
Yeah.
Okay, and other Chiefs DBs. I can remember one by Scandrick in the Monday night game against the Rams. That would have been pretty big. Thornhill just makes plays, and he is unbelievably athletic. He led all players in the draft in vertical and broad jump. The vertical jump, 44 inches. Yeah, I can't go. I could jump six times, and I wouldn't get 44 inches. Broad jump, 141 inches. Second, the bench press, which you may say it's not important, but that shows he has a combination of tremendous athleticism in regards to jumping and also strength. So this is a guy, And in high school, he made Sports Center for just an amazing dunk where he just went way up and above on an inbounds play. He was quarterback at one time. And listen, who do you put at quarterback when you're in high school? Your best athlete.
Your athlete, yeah.
Yeah, and he's an athlete. And I think it's a great pick. In fact, of all the picks the Chiefs made, I like this one the best.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing that I love about what the Chiefs are doing, especially with Steve Spagnuolo, the new defensive coordinator of the Chiefs. This is so refreshing. Because what was the thing we talked about when the Chiefs had Marcus Peters and Bob Sutton was defensive coordinator? What was the biggest thing we said about Marcus Peters?
He never moved.
Exactly. Why is he always on the same side of the field? Deion Sanders, the best corners that ever lived, they went with the best receiver no matter where they were on the field. They didn't just play on one side all the time. Marcus Peters has actually moved around since being on the Rams. Maybe that's why he's struggling now. I don't know. But he was always on one side of the field. And that's Bob Sutton's scheme. That's not Marcus Peters. I think we figure that out after a while. And so now you got Tyrann Mathieu, he's played, what do I show, 8 different spots on the field last year for the Cardinals. He lined up as D tackle one time. Mm-hmm. I mean, they move him around. So what happens is when you have guys that are versatile and they can play different spots, if Mathieu can play some slot corner, he can play free safety, strong safety, a linebacker spot, a hybrid, he can rush off the end, rush the passer. And then you add in a guy like Thornhill who could play some corner. He can play safety. He can run support. Good tackler. Tackles for loss as we went through. And then you've got Frank Clark, who you picked up, who can play inside at times. He can play outside. You can stunt with him and blitz. And that's something that the Chiefs didn't do. They didn't stunt hardly at all. And you've got Ogda from the Browns. You got Okafor. They all are able to do that. They fit the mold of what Steve Spagnuolo wants. Thornhill's a guy that is versatile. That means the Chiefs can move guys around a lot. What does that do for opposing quarterbacks, Dusty?
Well, unless 15 games into the season, you're always running the same sets out of moving. You're not as predictable, obviously.
Exactly. So, it's harder to know where the pressure's coming from. It's harder to know who's matched up with who. And a lot of times, quarterbacks look for a mismatch. Oh, well, I got this guy and this guy. Or I know he's always – like with the Chiefs, you always knew Marcus Peters is on the one side. So you want to pick on the other corner, you knew where to put your best receiver.
Yeah.
It was easy from that standpoint. Now, you had to still complete the pass and avoid a pass rush if the Chiefs had one. But now it's a lot less predictable. And I just love what the Chiefs are doing. It scares me how much I love what they're doing because – one, I like getting a speed guy to replace Hill because I think the writing's on the wall. And I've had people say, listen, they got to cut him. What are they doing keeping him? I'm like, listen, they're going to play it out. I think they could make a great point in cutting him right now because they ran away from Kareem Hunt pretty quickly after the video came out. But there's no video with Tyreek Hill. That's why this is apparently different. Although I think what Tyreek Hill allegedly did is much worse. But the Chiefs are going to let that ride. But I think it's very clear. The Chiefs say we're going to make the right decision. I do trust the Chiefs in this instance. I think the Chiefs are, especially when this draft pick happened, which I didn't need to see the draft pick to already feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
The Chiefs are going to cut Tyreek Hill, or they're going to try to trade him if somebody's dumb enough to trade for Tyreek Hill with his problems. They're going to either trade him or they're going to cut him. It's just a matter of time. Unless he gets completely exonerated from everything, which even then, you know that was his voice on the tape, and the line about, you should be terrified of me too, buh. That line just stands out. It's kind of like the kick for Kareem Hunt on that video. The whole thing with Kareem Hunt, I think most people could deal with it, but then the kick, that's what sent it over the edge. And I think the whole audio with Tyreek Hill, you would hope that, breaking your kid's 3-year-old arm would be enough, but that's allegedly. We don't know that. We don't have it on tape. We don't know if the fiance did it or if it was Tyreek Hill or somebody else. We don't technically know that. But we know what his mentality is because we caught him on tape, not we, his fiance, released to the public to where we know what kind of person he is. He's a great actor, okay? He played it up in the press. He wanted to play football. He had every reason to be on his best behavior for 3 years, get his prior conviction expunged from the record that he pled guilty to. And it's just a matter of time. Chiefs fans, I would be really stunned if the Chiefs keep Tyreek Hill on this team. I don't think they can. Based on all the bad things that happened over the history of the Chiefs, Javon Belcher with the murder-suicide, which was not in this regime's watch, but it is not too long ago. Mm-hmm. And then the Kareem Hunt situation. And now you brought Frank Clark on board. More on that in a moment. I just don't see at all how Tyreek Hill is going to be a member of this team next season. And I think the Chiefs are waiting for him to be arrested or charged, and as soon as that happens, they're cutting him. And if they're not going to do that, why would you trade up for a guy that's just like Tyreek Hill in stature and what he does? Why would you do that? Yeah. So this is
that's
like
the only reason. It's
this like, is the, like
that
the final
pick
nail
comes
in the coffin.
And it's like, oh my goodness,
I mean, that's so
like,
obvious.
This is Tyreek Hill.
Yes, except he doesn't have
then
problems.
Then you had like the best kick returner and punt returner in the draft, it's and like, I'm like,
what does Tyreek Hill do now?
100% all Tyreek Hill,
yes.
Right there.
Right. So I know Chiefs fans are getting some are riled up, like, man, you should cut him. This is embarrassing. They're gonna cut him. I would be stunned if they don't. They're going to cut him, or they're trade him if somebody's crazy enough to trade for him, and maybe they get some late draft pick. And by the way, anybody that says it was a horrible draft pick, it wasn't. It was a great draft pick when it comes to football. They got 3 great years out of him, and he was a Pro Bowler.
It was a fifth round draft pick. Yeah.
I mean, nobody gets that type of production on a fifth round draft pick.
No.
And great returner as well. Now, in regards to off the field, it was a horrible draft pick,
yes,
because John Dorsey got up there as GM at the time, and Andy Reid, and they kept saying, trust us, trust us, trust us. Well, we wouldn't bring somebody in the community that would be like, you know, we wouldn't bring somebody like this in the community if we didn't da-da-da-da-da. Well, guess what? You did. We trusted you. You were wrong. Now we're trusting you, not John Dorsey, but Brett Veach, Clark Hunt, and the Kansas City Chiefs to make the right call when it comes to Tyreek Hill. And I think they're going to make the right call. I do. All right, did I play the cut about Veach and Thornhill? Did I play that about his versatility?
Yeah.
I did. Okay, good. Yeah. Okay, so Thornhill and Hardman, they were the two that they drafted in the second round of the draft. By the way, let's jump now. We're going to jump back and forth a little bit, but since we already talked about Tyreek Hill a little bit, Clark Hunt, the owner of the Chiefs, finally on record commenting about the Tyreek Hill situation. Here's what he had to say.
And I would just reiterate that we were deeply disturbed by the audio, which we heard on Thursday. And that's why he's not with the organization at this point. And we would expect that'll be the case until we have a chance to work our way through whatever information we're able to get.
Is this a permanent decision?
No, I'm going to leave it where Brett left it when he spoke to you guys Thursday evening. He's not with the organization for the foreseeable future.
What is that process? You said working with the information. What is that process?
I'm not going to be able to go into that. There are a couple of ongoing investigations related to Tyreek, and we're going to have to let that process play out.
How difficult is this to watch one of your players go through this and for the franchise to go through this?
I think, again, I would just leave it with Brett's statement on Thursday evening. It obviously is a tough situation for the organization, and we wish the best for his family.
Chiefs owner Clark Hunt on the Tyreek Hill situation didn't say too much new than what Brett Veach already told us last week, the GM of the Chiefs, but he said for the foreseeable future, Tyreek Hill won't be a part of the team and their activities. One big difference between the Kareem Hunt situation and Tyreek Hill, there's lots of differences, but here's one. And in fairness to the Chiefs, and I'm not here to defend the Chiefs because, like I said, they said trust us, and, John Dorsey's not in Cleveland, he's taking Hunt on again. So John Dorsey's the guy I don't really think a lot of right now in regards to some things. But the Kareem Hunt situation, I've had people say, well, they ran so quickly on Kareem Hunt, why aren't they running away from Tyreek Hill? And I had those same thoughts, but you really stop and think about it. The Kareem Hunt situation, that investigation was already concluded. There were no charges filed. And then the video leaked out after that happened. Thus, the Chiefs moved on it. Had there still been an investigation, an active investigation, or charges were still current, the Chiefs may have still done what they did, or they might have waited to let the legal process take care of it. And if Kareem Hunt gets arrested or actually charged, okay, we're cutting him anyway. In this situation, to me, it looks very clear that the Chiefs are going to wait it out and see if he's actually charged or arrested. And then I think we'll have to probably make a decision at that point in time. And, obviously if he's arrested behind bars, which I'm sure he has the money or can get the money to have bond and get out. I don't know what the bond would be. But I understand what the Chiefs are doing. I still think they have enough to cut him loose right now. But yeah. I understand what they're doing. I do. I get that.
I think there's another thing that maybe some people are overlooking that I've kind of, as it keeps getting further and further here, that I'm kind of buying into as well. The NFL acted on Kareem Hunt before the Chiefs did.
Yeah, that's true.
They put him on that commissioner's reserve list. So the NFL has already acted and saying, yeah, I don't think this kid's going to be playing the rest of this year is kind of what it felt like by doing that. It's kind of an indefinite thing. And the NFL hasn't acted on Tyreek Hill at all.
Right.
And I think you kind of – I think they might have might be putting kind of the onus on the league to find out how they feel about it.
Could be.
To where – What's their punishment going to be?
Mm-hmm.
And they're not obviously going to act on it during the draft. They're not going to be – they're focused on everything that's going on in Nashville. And I think that might have a little bit to do with it, that the NFL hasn't really come out and done anything with this yet either.
They did
with Kareem Hunt. And then about an hour after he was on that list, he was gone.
As soon as he was on the list, that was it. Chiefs were done with him. Yeah, I agree with you. Although the Chiefs didn't know how long he'd be suspended.
Yeah.
So they took a chance to just – you know, cut him loose from that standpoint.
Yeah.
Although I'm guessing they got assurances from the National Football League, and so they felt safe in doing it at that point in time that he wouldn't be picked up by somebody else and still play last season or playoffs or anything like that. That's a good point as well. So this is a little bit more complicated than what people – a lot of people want to make things black and white. Most things in life are not black and white. I mean, some things are, but most things aren't. This one, you know, seems like a black and white situation for people is, listen, you heard the audio. You know he's got to be guilty. That's the way he does. He didn't deny punching his kid in the chest when his arms are held out like his fiance described on the audio. He's a punk. He's a thug. He beats people. He's done it before. Now he's beating his own kid. Get rid of him. Well, we don't know if he broke his kid's arm. We don't hear him actually saying he punched his kid in the chest. He didn't deny it, but he did not say he did it. So there's, you know, in the court of justice, our legal system. Now, the Chiefs, I think, are just playing it safe right now, and I get it. But I understand the outrage from Chiefs community and fans because there was all that concern way back when he was drafted, and the Chiefs took a big gamble, and it worked on the field for a few years, but then kind of blew up in their face. Okay, so we're going to jump back to the draft and then back to Frank Clark and tie this all together. So we go back in the NFL draft. The Chiefs make their second-round picks, and then the third-round pick, the Chiefs, They end up on their third-round pick. They go with Kalen Saunders, a big defensive tackle, a good run stopper, can get some pressure. He's from Western Illinois, and a guy that at 324 pounds can do backflips. I thought Brady Pollen jumping over the high jump bar at 6'10 and a quarter was crazy. 324-pound defensive lineman can do cartwheels and backflips.
Just like every 324-pounder
can do. Absolutely. I'm a buck 80, and I can't do that, or I don't want to because I don't want to land on my head and break my neck.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm not doing that. There's that unathletic stuff I was talking about earlier on the show. So they get Saunders in round three. I think the reviews on him are pretty decent. So they add some depth on the defensive line. And then they trade around. They didn't have a fourth-round pick. They traded away their fifth-round pick. So they went to the sixth-round pick, which was Rashad Fenton from South Carolina, a corner, which they kind of add some depth at corner, which I like. We talked about how they probably draft a running back. This Darwin Thompson is kind of a Tarik Cohen clone from the Bears, who's had a lot of success, and even more so with Matt Nagy, who was the Chiefs offensive coordinator, now the new coach of the Bears last year. And the Bears, all they did was win their division and make the playoffs. Darwin Thompson, what is he, like 5'8", like a scat back? Mm-hmm. He's a guy that will fit in well, I think, in this system for the Chiefs.
Yes.
So that might be a sleeper pick there. And in round seven, they picked up an offensive lineman who is all Big Ten performer, but he fell all the way to round seven. He can play guard, maybe even tackle. He can play center. Chiefs need some help at center, maybe. Austin Ryder's their center for now. Only played four games last year. Let Mitch Morse go to free agency with the Bills. Nick Allegretti is his name from Illinois. So, you know, you look at it, a wide receiver, a running back, an offensive lineman, and you've got three defensive players, two DBs, one that can play safety or corner, other a corner, and then a defensive tackle. And on top of it, you've got a special team specialist in Mecole Hardman. Considering that they only had six picks in this draft, I think they filled some of these needs, at least on paper. Here's the only problem, though. It's just like recruiting in high school, going to college. You get all excited about rivals. Oh, they're five stars, they're four stars. Oh, well, this guy, all these people from Utah State. Darwin Thompson's amazing. Well, of course you're going to say that. You're a Utah State fan. But what's he going to do against the big boys in the National Football League? Mecole Hardman's really fast. Great. What if he can't catch the ball?
Yeah.
So we have to be like a constrained excitement, I think, is what we need to provide here, is that on paper it looks fairly good, but so do a lot of teams' drafts. But based on the picks they had and where they picked, And the Chiefs are a team not that far away from winning a championship, it appears, especially when Patrick Mahomes is a quarterback. I think they did pretty good, and really, they did what we talked about the other day. What did we say? Priorities. Well, corner. Okay, got two DBs. Offensive line. Got a guy that's flexible that can play guard, tackle, or center in the seventh round. We might want some depth on the defensive line. We said that Friday. Kalen Saunders, there's a defensive tackle. And we also said the Chiefs probably will do something at wide receiver because of the Tyreek Hill situation. I didn't know if they'd jump that quickly like that with their first pick of the draft going that route and trading up, but they did. And they get speed. And then we said they need a third running back. They're going to look for a third running back. And they did. So really, what the Chiefs did was really honestly predictable, but in a good way.
Yeah.
I don't think they reached anywhere.
I don't sit there and have any real problems with anything that the Chiefs did in the draft. I got one guy I follow on Twitter that was just livid that they traded up to pick Hardman. He wanted Butler from Iowa State so bad. And I'm like, how does this guy fit better than what you need in Hardman if you lose Tyreek Hill? Yeah. You don't need a 6'5 receiver. Right. That's a possession guy.
Right. And maybe that's who they would have went with had Tyreek Hill not been in any bad situation.
But to replace Tyreek Hill, you actually understand your team that you support. Uh-huh. A 6'5 possession receiver is not what you need for Pat Mahomes. You've got guys that can do that for you.
Yes.
Travis Kelce can do that for you if you need a guy that can go up and get the ball.
That's right.
You know, you don't trade up to get this guy who – fell way lower than that anyway.
And it's two birds with one stone because you get a speed guy that can be a receiver and a return specialist.
As I see a lot of people that are like, oh, this guy's just like DeAnthony Thomas. I'm like, no. DeAnthony Thomas was a running back at
Oregon.
Right. He converted to a wide receiver. Yeah. Tyreek Hill was a running back at Oklahoma State, converted to wide receiver West Alabama or wherever he went. He played a lot of different positions there. And so this is not the same. This kid was a wide receiver in college. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But was not the best receiver on the team, and he got drafted ahead of.
And Shipley was. Is that his
Ridley.
Name?
Ridley.
Yeah. I mean, Shipley was
Calvin Ridley's brother.
Texas Ridley Riley was Ridley. Ridley was their best receiver. I mean, I don't think that most people would agree with that. But the thing is, you develop this guy. You let him come back to return kicks for you for a year, and then keep developing him as a wide receiver, which is what he is.
Right. Here, I'll
and
give you,
he continues to improve, and he's not DeAnthony Thomas.
I'll give you another reason why I think this is a good pick, and I think the Chiefs are thinking, if there's the outside 1% chance Tyreek Hill stays on this team, okay, fine. So Tyreek Hill stays on this team. Tyreek Hill has a good, great, bad year, whatever he has next year. The Chiefs can cut bait with him after next year because now they have trained this guy to take over his job. He's kind of the apprentice in waiting for a year.
Yeah.
And then you save the money and I have to pay a franchise tag to Tyreek Hill. Right. So I think it makes sense in multiple fronts why they went with Hardman. The obvious part is, well, you need a replacement for Hill because Hill's not going to be back. But if he were back, I think this says, Tyreek, you're only going to be here for a year.
Yeah.
Unless Hardman just doesn't pan out. Then maybe the Chiefs do something different. But I just highly, highly, highly doubt that Tyreek Hill is going to be back with the Chiefs. I don't know. Is there a scenario where you can think he would be back with the Chiefs? Like, if Crystal Espinal, his fiance, comes out and says, I'm the one that broke my son's arm, it wasn't Tyreek, and da-da-da-da-da, and she says it's all her fault, which you can't believe her then, because abusive relationships, people lie to protect the other person. If she ends up doing all that stuff, or maybe Tyreek Hill threatens her with, I'm going to kill you, I hope not, but let me tell you something. This guy sounds terrifying on his audio at times. And he's tried to strangle her, choked her, punched her in the stomach when she was pregnant back in 2014 when he was Oklahoma State. If he's willing to do all those things, and that's not long, long time ago, what do you think he's willing to do to her if she, in essence, because of this audio leaked out that she secretly recorded, ends his career? Do you think Tyreek Hill's going to go out and be a great insurance salesman? Because I don't think so.
No.
So this is his livelihood. So I think Crystal Espinal's got to be a long way away from Tyreek Hill. And I would say that even if tomorrow she comes out and says, you know what, it was all me. I did all this, and da-da-da-da, you got to right away go, I don't believe you, and I think you've been intimidated and threatened by your boyfriend, fiancé. Because I won't believe that even if she comes out and says that. But if the Chiefs would believe it, which would be convenient for them, because then they could maybe keep Tyreek Hill. Because let's be honest, do the Chiefs really want to cut Tyreek Hill? No. They want to win football games.
Yeah.
They really, really do. They wish this would go away. And that would be the greatest situation for them and Tyreek Hill is, hey, he's exonerated. The only problem is the audio is still there. We're not going to forget that comment he made, that one line. But I think the Chiefs would be like, hey, listen, we got past the whole background problems he had and the issues Oklahoma State, and we drafted him. Chiefs fans got over it because he performed. The Chiefs will get over this as well. If we find out he isn't guilty of breaking his kid's arm, he never admitted any wrongdoing. Yeah, I had some scary stuff on the audio. But the Chiefs fans will get past that if once we get on the football field and he does great things again. Maybe the Chiefs are that naive to think that'll work. I don't think it will in this situation, but it might. But if Tyreek Hill would somehow be on this team, this is still a good draft pick because I think that tells you the Chiefs don't want to invest in Tyreek Hill long term. And why would you after what's happened?
Now, the damage has been done.
I think so too.
You know, even if something comes out and, you know, like you say, I wouldn't believe Crystal for 1 second if she came out and said it. Now, if there was an investigation and said, we still can't prove anything.
Right.
We still have nothing good against Tyreek Hill other than what the audio you heard, which these portions of the audio aren't holding up for what we want to accomplish.
Right.
And even with all that, I just feel like he was still in that home when a 3-year-old had his arm broken. Whether he's complicit in that in some way.
I know. So
and
she.
I think the damage has been done from that aspect.
I would agree.
We're so far down the line here that
you
I just
think.
Don't feel like even
you would
if
think.
Even if that happens, the PR hit is big right now. If
you would think,
even if he stays, even if all that happens and he stays on the team,
you would think. But that didn't stop the Chiefs from trading for a guy that was charged with domestic assault, and I'll get to that in a moment. All right, so that's the Chiefs draft. Now, KU and K-State guys, where are they going for the NFL? Duke Shelley drafted by the Bears, out of Kansas State, of course, DB. Dalton Reisner goes to the Broncos. That hurt me. And you, I know, Dalton Reisner. But he's from Colorado. It's his dream come true to play for the Broncos, which
I'm happy for him.
Class act. Drew Locke goes the very next pick for Missouri. I think that's a dangerous guy. I think he's going to be the ultimate bust or great pick. I think there's no in-between with Drew Locke. I think he's either going to be great or he's going to be a complete bust. Alex Barnes goes to the Titans, was not drafted. The Big 12 leading rusher, not drafted, which was interesting. But thus, he gets to pick where he wants to go, goes to Tennessee, might get an opportunity there. Winston Dimmel, former fullback K-State, going to the Seahawks, so he'd be reunited there with Tyler Lockett. Although they didn't play together, did they? Lockett was too far ahead, or did they play together?
I don't think they did.
But anyway, they can talk K-State with the Seahawks. Steven Sims, wide receiver KU, signing a free agent deal with the Rossian Redskins. Joe Dineen going to the Broncos. He's one of my favorite players on KU in regards to how hard he works, and he's going to the Broncos. Daniel Wise going to the Dallas Cowboys. Many people thought he'd be drafted as high as maybe the fourth-round pick. Was not drafted. Abdul Beecham going where? I don't have that one on here.
Oh, man. Bills, I think.
The Bills?
Yeah,
all
and
right.
then Eli Walker's going to the Seahawks, too,
the Seahawks.
From K-State.
Right. So there's your wrap of your KU, K-State guys. Tragedy in Topeka, if you didn't hear about this yesterday, as a Washburn football player, Dwayne Simmons, a defensive back junior, was killed in a shooting on Sunday morning. And while former player Corey Ballantyne, who was just drafted by the New York Giants in the sixth round over the weekend, he was injured in the shooting. It happened at around 12:45 in the morning as officers responded. Simmons died at the scene. Ballantyne, 23, suffered non-life-threatening injuries. The Giants have made statements. And they probably were out celebrating. He'd just been drafted hours earlier. The university made comments. Craig Shrew, the head coach of Washburn, said Simmons had 2 torn ACLs, was coming back from 2 torn ACLs in his career, and just the nicest. He said just so much fun to be around, contagious smile, and they're just devastated there at Washburn. Their football team, their teammates, the coaches, the presidents made comments certainly saying that, listen, these guys have been model citizens, unlike Tyreek Hill or Frank Clark. These guys have been model citizens, and it's unfortunate. It sounds like they're in the wrong place at the wrong time, but we don't know. The investigation will continue. Hopefully, Ballantyne can continue with his NFL career. He's from Topeka all along. Dwayne Simmons from Lee Summit, Missouri, killed in a shooting at the age of 23, would have been back for his, he said he's a junior, so he would have been back probably redshirted because of those injuries or medical hardships. So horrible tragedy there in Topeka. Thoughts and prayers go out to everybody involved there. Now, we shift back to the Chiefs. Frank Clark. Now, listen, I think some Chiefs fans aren't doing their homework. I think some Chiefs fans are not doing their homework. And honestly, I think the media is not doing their homework either. Or the media is so involved and engrossed with Tyreek Hill that they're overlooking this Frank Clark situation. And here's where I have a bit of a problem with the Chiefs organization – not because I don't like Frank Clark, not because I think Frank Clark can help this Chiefs defense, because he absolutely can. Mm-hmm. But I'm gonna criticize myself as well, because I did not go into the details of what happened with Frank Clark in 2014, the same year Tyreek Hill had his incident. And it's not an incident. That was a crime. Yeah. Okay? So I did a little bit of research on Frank Clark. And I did it over the weekend. And I have not heard any media outlet go into the details that I found online. And I have to wonder if already the Kansas City media has become immune to domestic violence. And the Chiefs organization as well. For all of you that love the trade for Frank Clark, which, that's great. You know, they spend a lot of money. They bring him in. He's better than D Ford. As a football move, this makes sense. It makes sense to me. You're in it to win it. You're close to winning a Super Bowl. You go for it. You get Frank Clark. But we've already talked about Javon Belcher. Murder, suicide. Killed himself in the Chiefs parking lot years ago. All right? Not long, long time ago.
It was 2012, because it was the same day K-State beat Texas to win the Big 12.
7 years ago. So that's not a long time ago. 7 years ago, but previous regime in regards to the GM, although Clark Hunt was the owner. So that's under his, that falls under his hat. Okay? And Clark Hunt signs off on these draft picks, by the way. He signs off on the trades. You don't do that without the final approval by the owner. So really, folks, you don't want to, I don't think you got to put all the blame on Andy Reid, because was he wasn't the coach back then when Belcher killed himself.
No, that was Romeo Crennel, I'm pretty sure.
I believe so. So, and then the GM, of course, was John Dorsey.
Yeah.
And he's not with the Chiefs anymore. So you got a new GM, a new head coach, but you still have the same owner. And to me, that's where everybody's missing the boat. All these people that are outraged by Tyreek Hill's conduct, and outraged by having Kareem Hunt and what he did, and outraged when Javon Belcher did what he did. Why is that outrage not directed at Clark Hunt specifically? I've met Clark Hunt once. Seems like a super nice guy. But he's the constant in this whole thing. He is the one that allows the Chiefs organization to draft or trade for people that have been involved with domestic violence or assault. Javon Belcher. Kareem Hunt. Larry Johnson. We forget about him. That was under Clark Hunt's watch as well. Is that just bad luck? Tyreek Hill. That's not bad luck. You knew what he did and still drafted him. And now, with everything going on with Tyreek Hill, you trade for Frank Clark. This isn't that hard to find online. November 17, 2014, Frank Clark was dismissed as a senior on the Michigan Wolverine football team. Dismissed on a Monday after police arrested the starting defensive end on domestic violence charges in Ohio that weekend. Clark, a native of Cleveland, Ohio, was arrested in early morning hours on a Sunday. He appeared on a video conference in the Sandusky Municipal Court on Monday. He pled not guilty in domestic violence charges. Bail was set at $3,000. Brady Hoke was the head coach of Michigan at the time. And tell me if you think this is a little bit refreshing. Brady Hoke said in a written statement after Frank Clark was arrested, and he was one of their best defensive players at the time, "This is a tragic situation. Our student athletes will be held accountable when their actions fail to meet the standard we have at Michigan. There is a legal process that will occur, and we respect that process." Hoke called the report unacceptable in a news conference and said he doesn't want his program to be associated with those types of allegations. Hoke said he has not yet had a chance to speak to Clark, but looks forward to doing so in the future. He said he first heard about Clark's arrest Sunday morning and spent the next 24 hours collecting as much information as possible before making a decision to dismiss Clark, not suspend him, dismiss him from the team. Hoke said he speaks to the team regularly about domestic abuse. He said, and I quote, "I've told our guys since day one that it won't be tolerated. It won't be tolerated in this program. I have a daughter who's 29. I have a wife. I have two sisters. That's always been probably one of the first things I talk about with our teams at least a couple times every year." Ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to me, listen even harder now. In the police report, Frank Clark's girlfriend said he punched her in the face after an altercation in the Maui Sands Hotel in Sandusky, Ohio. The woman's brother, who was also in the room, said he saw Clark pick her up by the neck and slam her to the ground. Let me repeat. Clark's girlfriend said he punched her in the face. The woman's brother, who was also in the room, a witness, said he saw Clark pick her up by the neck and slam her to the ground. Clark was outside the room when police arrived, according to the report. He told officers that he didn't touch the woman, saying she was having crazy fits and maybe pregnant. The woman declined to go to the hospital for her injuries and said she did not want to press charges. This was Clark's second arrest during his career with the Michigan Wolverines. He pled guilty to a second-degree home invasion felony charge after stealing a laptop from a Michigan dorm in September 2012. He paid a fine, was sentenced to 12 months probation, and was suspended from the team's season-opening loss to Alabama. This was 5 years ago. You have to ask yourself this question, ladies and gentlemen. Is it all about winning and winning at all costs, or to hell with the consequences and to hell with your community and to heck with everybody else? We don't care about the safety of our community until we get caught. Why aren't the Chiefs doing the exact same thing that Brady Hoke did? There's a slight difference. The girlfriend eventually didn't file charges. Mm-hmm. She dropped it. You have to wonder why. Why would you report this and then suddenly drop it? You have to wonder, right?
Yes.
Frank Clark's had a heated fight with a teammate a couple years ago, and he's also said some mean things to a female writer on Twitter after she criticized, or not necessarily criticized, but brought up Clark's past with that domestic assault charge that was dropped. Brady Hoke did not reinstate Frank Clark to the football team. Brady Hoke said, "We've talked about this over and over. It will not be tolerated." And he was dismissed. The Chiefs have not one time with Javon Belcher, Larry Johnson, not that I recall. And if they did, it's even worse. Javon Belcher, Larry Johnson, Kareem Hunt, now Tyreek Hill, now Frank Clark. Have you heard the Chiefs organization, specifically Clark Hunt, say, "We've had this happen a few times, more than we would like. This will not be tolerated any longer"? Have you heard him say that?
Obviously not.
No.
If he said that,
then you wouldn't be doing
before Thursday, before Wednesday, I guess, when
Tyreek
they made
Hill
the trade
gone
for Brandon Clark.
Tyreek Hill would be gone. Frank Clark wouldn't have
Frank
been traded
Clark.
For
when they made the trade for Frank Clark, if he said it before that, then it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
None of this makes sense. If you can't take a stand now and say that there's a zero tolerance policy when you went out and traded for somebody that did it.
Right.
This is not possible.
And let's make it clear, he's never said that. But what we're saying is, yeah, at some point he should have.
Yeah.
It's not like it's a one-time thing. This is all under Clark Hunt's watch. Why are we criticizing Andy Reid so much when there's a history and a length of history here with Clark Hunt as the owner allowing this to happen? And you may say, well, listen, he can't babysit everybody. True, but he can make sure they don't draft people like this.
Yeah.
I don't see Chris Ballard of the Colts draft a whole bunch of domestic abusers, do you? I don't see the GM of the Patriots doing it.
No.
I don't see the GM of the Broncos doing it. And I don't even want to put this on Brett Veach. Although, if he's allowed to get whoever he wants and Andy Reid signs off of it, I think they're culpable in this situation. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But they weren't part of the previous regimes where Javon Belcher killed himself and his fiance or wife, and they weren't a part of the Larry Johnson fiasco where he beat people.
That was Dick Vermeil and Carl Peterson there.
Right. So why, for all these people that are upset and riled up about the Tyreek Hill situation, and you can be mad at Tyreek Hill. I get it. You should be. Nobody should do that stuff if you think he did that. All right, if you're set after listening to audio and you believe he broke his kid's arm and he does this and punches his kid in the chest for discipline when he's three, yeah, I totally get where you're coming from, and I agree with you. There's no place for that. But then if you start pointing fingers and yelling at Andy Reid, you have a short memory. Andy Reid, yeah, you probably should criticize him. You should criticize Brett Veach. You should criticize John Dorsey, who's no longer here. But you sure as heck better point to the top guy on the ring, on the ladder. Who is the top guy in the Chiefs organization?
Clark Hunt.
The guy that owns the team. What Brett said the other day. That was basically his comment earlier. Yeah. As an owner of the team, you have to step up. If you care about your community, if you really, truly care about your community, more than just winning football games, you take a stand. Brady Hoke is no longer the coach at Michigan, correct?
Correct.
But by golly, at least he has his principles and morals in order and said, listen, Frank Clark, we're not tolerating it. I told everybody we're not tolerating it. I can relate. I have a daughter. I have a wife. I have two sisters. Does Clark Hunt not have any women in his life? Oh, yes, he does. He's married. Does he think it's okay for people to beat women? Does he think it's okay for a man to punch a woman in the face, take her, slam her into the ground? Allegedly, after the girlfriend, why would you make all that stuff up, and the brother, and then suddenly drop the charges? You can listen to me right now and say, wait a minute, Wade, they dropped the charges. There's nothing to see here. Frank Clark has had some violent episodes since then, although certainly it was in a training camp situation, which I'm not going to hold too much against him there because there have been fights before in training camp, okay? But the point I'm trying to say is he was arrested before that and did something wrong, and he should have known better. Frank Clark was introduced at a press conference. They continued with it, even though they were going to get a whole bunch of questions about Tyreek Hill. Oddly enough, the whole Tyreek Hill stuff has been going on. The Chiefs have known about this for a few months now, about the broken arm and the house and this and that, and probably knew more than we even know now. And they still went and traded for a guy. Reports are, did that to a woman. What they can hide behind is, well, he wasn't charged. So thus it didn't happen.
Yeah, he's, to my knowledge, never been convicted of a crime.
He is
so
not.
That's how you can...
Now he had a misdemeanor felony for the home invasion at a dorm, stealing a laptop.
Yeah.
All right, so Frank Clark. I'm not saying people can't change their spots, but they don't change them overnight. Tyreek Hill obviously didn't. Larry Johnson didn't during his career. Javon Belcher obviously didn't. Kareem Hunt obviously didn't. There are some people that do make amends for their problems and their issues. That sometimes happens. Mm-hmm. And I hope it does for Frank Clark. So Frank Clark was asked, what did you learn from the 2014 incident?
When you go through something like that and you put yourself in that position, the first thing is like you got to own up to it and understand what you did, what you've done. You know, I affect a lot of people doing that. It wasn't just, you know, Frank Clark or Frank Clark's family or anyone else. It was Frank Clark. It was, you know, the Michigan football team. You know, who would have known? You know, who would have known where we would have been if Frank Clark was still on that team? You know, but unfortunately, you know, it ended how it ended. And, you know, it's just something I have to learn and grow from. It's something I'll continue to learn and grow from. That's why I'm so persistent and, you know, just bettering myself first. You know, I'm persistent. It's 5 years later. You know, I'm just persistent and just doing everything I have to do to spread my word and spread the message and, you know, continue to speak out and be an advocate. You know, I think that's important. I think you got to have a heart sometime, a real heart. And that's just being real. You know, I'm a real person. I don't sugarcoat nothing. I don't hide nothing. I don't got nothing to hide. I can barely hide. It's all out there. And, you know, that's just me. I feel like everyone's going to get a chance to know me. You know, I know what they read. I know everything people see. And, you know, I know the perception people can have. And that's easy, you know. But I just feel like the hard part is getting to actually know somebody. And I feel like once everyone does that, they'll understand me as a person.
Clark said that really all of this has made him a better person. Let's hope so.
The assurance I can give you guys is just, you know, basically letting you know that it's no greater, you know, thing or action I can do, but just to keep it real. I mean, I feel like everything that I've done from that point is that. I feel like everything I've done has been opening and just been about opening up about my past and just hoping people understand just the type of person I am and where I come from. I feel like when you do something like that and you go through a situation like that, you can come out two sides. You know, you can come out, you know, in a positive manner, or you can come out negative. You know, it can make or break you. And I definitely feel like this was one of the things that happened in my life, amongst all the things that have happened, that definitely made me better, you know, a better person, a better father, and just, you know, more understanding, more compassionate. And it's made my heart a little bit bigger. So,
listen, I'm torn on the Frank Clark situation. I wanted to make a point there in regards to Clark Hunt. He's the constant in this whole thing. Why he's not catching a whole bunch of heat from people, I don't understand. Okay? Frank Clark, it's kind of a weird situation because he grew up homeless. He's made it out of the streets as a homeless person, in essence. He lost three family members to a fire just over a year ago. He lost his dad in a fire that he believes was caused by arson, and two other family members. I mean, nobody should have to go through that. We all make mistakes. Frank Clark, perhaps his mistakes are in the past in regards to something like we talked about with the details of his incident in 2014, which he was not charged for, but still you go, how can that all be brought up and then just completely dropped like nothing happened? You have to wonder, but technically he was not charged. So you can wipe that under the rug if you want. But my point of this whole story is I don't have anything against Frank Clark. If another NFL team wants to take on Frank Clark, I'm perfectly fine with it. If the Chiefs didn't have any history of this, I would have no problem with the Chiefs trading for Frank Clark either. But all the things the Chiefs have done with the players they've had and the problems they've had with assault and domestic violence and a guy, a murder for crying out loud as part of that domestic abuse and violence, and then a suicide, the Chiefs aren't the team that should be taking on Frank Clark no matter how great he is. And I didn't have that opinion when the Chiefs made the trade. But now that I've researched this more, that's the opinion I have. If you want to be consistent with your argument and you want to be all over Tyreek Hill and the Kansas City Chiefs for Tyreek Hill, and you're still upset with Larry Johnson's situation or Kareem Hunt and how did they keep him that long after he had multiple incidents we didn't know about, or you want to go back to Javon Belcher, then you cannot be in favor of this trade for Frank Clark. No. Otherwise, you're not consistent at all with your argument. Here's Clark about growing up homeless.
And my thoughts every day when I was homeless was just like, you know, Brett said, it was, what's the purpose? You know, what's my purpose here in life? You know, so I'm going through depression. I'm battling all type of stuff, you know, and it was really I struggled for the longest in trying to find my purpose in life. And it got to a point where I started understanding myself a little bit better, you know, as I got older, as I started maturing. And it was really, you know, I wouldn't say the last 5 years, but say the last 6 years, that's the time it's taken for me to really understand my purpose in life and what I really need to be doing with everything, especially now when I can use my platform to touch many more people. And when you're waking up, you know, you're in the streets or you're in the shelter and you're sharing a community shower with, you know, 400 or 500 people, you know, it's very humbling. You know, some nights you don't get the shower because they was packed, or, you know, some nights I don't get a meal because it might not be necessarily something that we eat, or, you know, it might not really be that good, but I'm still thankful because it's being put in front of me. And you know, just when you can take that, you know, step into seeing it, how they view things, and, you know, being in that position, you'll understand a little bit more. And I feel like that's my job, to help the people who don't really understand it, and to help, you know, those who do, to feel a little bit better about it. Because it's a touchy subject, you know, the topic of being homeless and just the homelessness epidemic, not just in Seattle or Los Angeles, but everywhere across the country. You know, it touched me on the way to the building, and I see guys on the side of the road here holding signs, you know? And it's just something that in my head and in my heart is just, you know, I want to help change. I know it's a little change, but I feel like with a little change, it'll lead to a lot more, you know? So that's really my goal here.
That's the newest member of the Chiefs, Frank Clark. I mean, you want to like him because he grew up homeless and he understands that part. He sounds contrite. He says the right things. I will remind you, Tyreek Hill said some of the right things too after he was drafted. So is this all an act or is this really the new Frank Clark? I can't tell you, and only time will tell if he is different than he was back in 2012, 2014, or if he is the same person. I don't know. We found out with Tyreek Hill, he didn't really improve as a person, apparently. So hopefully Frank Clark turns out differently. Chiefs take another chance in this situation, and I think it's a chance that, you know, it's all about winning, and it's not about the repercussions that happen again. And if something happens with Frank Clark and the Chiefs, similar to anything with Tyreek Hill or Kareem Hunt, I think Clark Hunt, the Chiefs kingdom has to say this is, we have to, as a Chiefs kingdom, I'd say this is enough. You're the owner of this franchise, for crying out loud. We can do better. NFL could place Tyreek Hill on commissioner's exempt list this week. Reports say the Chiefs are likely to take action on Tyreek Hill this week, which would go correspond with what Dusty was saying. Chiefs wait for the NFL to take action, then the Chiefs will take action. That could very well be the case. NBA playoffs, the Warriors beat the Rockets yesterday, 104-100. And Boston Celtics beat the Bucks, 112-90. Warriors and Celtics take one game to none leads in those best of seven series. Tonight, it is the Sixers and Raptors, game two. Raptors up 1-0. Portland versus Denver, game one, as Denver beat San Antonio in game seven the other night. What's coming out of the NBA playoffs is, it's about officiating. James Harden is whining about officiating, saying he's not getting a fair shake after losing the Warriors yesterday.
What can I do about it? I was told the same thing at half, and there's probably a couple more in that second half. I mean, I just want a fair chance, man. Call the game how it's supposed to be called, and that's it. And I'll live with the results, but when you, especially we all know what happened a few years back with Kawhi, like that can change an entire series. Just call the game how it's supposed to be called, and we'll live with the results. And it's plain and simple.
Okay, listen, I respect James Harden's game. He's fun to watch, but I don't really take too warmly to James Harden asking for a fair shake. You want to be fair? You're playing with rules. He says he wants the game to be called like it's supposed to be called. Well, then maybe we should start calling travels every time you take three steps to shoot a three. Maybe we should start calling fouls when you initiate the contact and jump forward 3 feet. Maybe we should start calling fouls on you as an offensive player when you drive in the lane and you grab the defender's arm, pull it towards you as you have the ball, and some of the officials fall for it and call it on the defensive player when you're grabbing his arm. And you're the one whining about getting a fair shake. I find that laughable. Okay, I do understand,
like,
the players.
Literally, I'm going to laugh at it.
I understand the player safety part of it. I do. When you go for a jump shot, you don't want to be taken out below. We saw what happened to Kawhi Leonard. I get that point that he's saying. But when you're sitting here talking about a fair shake and all these calls are missed, listen, you do. And I'm not a Draymond Green fan. Everybody knows that. But Draymond Green, here's what he had to say about the closeouts and the calls not being called when Harden goes up for three.
No, I'm a contested shot. When you land 3 feet ahead of where you shoot the ball from, that ain't really my issue. So it is what it is.
I don't know how a defender can defend a three-point shot and not land on the offensive player when he does sometimes jump forward 3 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Draymond Green doesn't make a good point. Now, not all those threes that Harden took yesterday, he was falling forward 3 feet. And there's probably a legit argument that you got to be able to come down and you call a foul. Okay, I get that. But it's just, to me, extremely hypocritical for James Harden to be whining about officiating, all I want's a fair shake, when you get away with carrying the ball, you get away with all kinds of acting and flopping, you get away with traveling almost all the time and grabbing a defender's arm when you drive to the hoop, which I've seen multiple times, and maybe everybody that plays against you should cry to the officials, say, we want a fair shake so we can defend James Harden, because he has an inherent advantage, and that is he doesn't get called for traveling. You ever think about that, James?
Yeah. I can't really add much to that because it's like...
This makes you shake your head, doesn't it?
Anybody in the NBA that really complains about you need to call the game the right way.
That means
how much stuff have you gotten away with before you say that?
Lane violations, traveling, fouls on rebounds, basket interference, 3 second violation. Basically the rules.
Basic rules of basketball just are not at all followed. There's a moving screen by a big man on every single possession, and probably three on each possession at least.
Yes, every pick and roll play, dude.
Yeah. And it's just like, you guys really are going to complain about NBA officials not calling stuff?
I'm with you.
When a guy can take an inbound pass and walk three steps before he dribbles and he doesn't get called for a travel.
Amen. NHL playoffs, Carolina up 2-0 on the Islanders. They win 2-1. Avalanche, even the series with the Sharks, they win yesterday 4-3. That series tied 1-1. Blue Stars, game 3. That series tied 1-1. The only game on the hockey playoff schedule for today. I will leave you with this. Listen, I am a Chiefs fan. Dusty's a Chiefs fan. But there's more in life to being a sports fan. There's more in life to just doing whatever to win at all costs. There, at least that's my opinion. Maybe you're different. You're like, listen, I don't care what laws my team breaks or my players break, as long as we win a Super Bowl. And if that's the way you are, fine. You have the right to feel that way or do that or be that type of fan. But I think most of us feel like, listen, if this was Joe Schmo in North Central Kansas and we heard audio like that and there was a kid with a broken arm and the kid was removed from the home, don't you think all of us in North Central Kansas would really want that person arrested?
Yes.
So why is this any different? Oh, because he's a really good football player. Well, just erase all that stuff he does then. That's convenient for your team, isn't it? If you're one of those few people that feels that way, you need to wake up. Now, most of us, I think, are in the same category that Dusty and I are, and that is, listen, if you want to let the legal system play out, fine. Or you want the NFL to come down first and then make your decision, let Tyreek Hill go, fine. But I think it's a small amount of people, but I'm on this board now, and it pains me a little bit because I like Frank Clark as a player, and I do know he can help my team that I love, the Chiefs, win a Super Bowl. But is a Super Bowl worth having a whole bunch of people that are in a community, or I shouldn't say a whole bunch of people, a few players here and there that do commit crimes or have been charged with crimes that are later dropped that could be problems in our community or in Kansas City in that situation? You know, ask yourself, we're out here in North Central Kansas. If we had a professional NFL team that was 4 miles down the road, would you be cool with members, players that have those backgrounds coming in your community to live in your community? Would you be comfortable with that stuff? Would you be all gung-ho for those guys to come in? Maybe you would with Frank Clark because, oh, he was homeless and he dealt with that. And, okay, he made a mistake and we don't know for sure exactly what happened. The charges were dropped. And he's had a few instances before that and a few since then. But he's maybe growing up as a man and he'll be a different person. You could feel that way. But if somebody brought in Javon Belcher, Larry Johnson, Kareem Hunt, Tyreek Hill, and Frank Clark in the North Central Kansas, would you be okay with all that? I'm guessing not.
There would be some trepidation. Like,
wouldn't it?
I'm not sure if I really want that.
We got another guy that has questionable past.
Your human nature would be to say, you know, guys deserve second chances.
But why are we the ones always given the second chance?
Exactly, and that's the other thing around. That's where it comes around the other way. Is like, why does it have to always be us?
And we've been burned.
Yeah, exactly. And so you mean second chance, third chance, fourth chance, whatever.
Yeah.
Tyreek Hill's had more than a second chance.
It would be different if all these guys did those things but had second chances and then they turned out to be success stories. Then it'd be different because, the Chiefs are given chances. This is a great story. The Chiefs give these guys second chances. They've turned around and been unbelievable people, been community leaders, and cleaned up their lives. But what we've seen is Larry Johnson's found God since all this stuff, and he's apparently thought about suicide multiple times. It looks like he's on the road to rehabilitation. That's taken him a long time to get there, okay?
Well, after he hung up the cleats.
Within 3 years, Tyreek Hill hasn't figured that out, it doesn't appear, from what he did. And Frank Clark, the jury's still out if he's figured it out. We won't know until he plays his career out in Kansas City. We know Javon Belcher didn't play out very well, and we know Kareem Hunt didn't play out very well. So far, with all the things we brought up, the five examples, none of them have really particularly turned out well, have they?
No.
So why do we keep going down that path? Because this guy can play football, and he's really good at it.